other colleagues will join us, and we will eventually do a little bit of wrap up for them and continue. So welcome back. It is very much, I'm very much happy to see you all here back. Yesterday was an intensive day. Today is going to be also quite intensive. And then in the next 2 remaining days, together with my colleagues Mary and Lisa, you are going to look more in detail into the specific area. So moving a little bit more from the theoretical elements to more practical hands-on activities, and so also having more having fun and having less let's say intense, still intensive, but not so a bit heavy as it was yesterday. And I already apologize, but today as well we will have a bit of look back into the theory, into some more contents related to backward design, and then we will also start entering into the DIGCOM paper. So before starting with our 2-day agenda, if you have any question, if you have any comments, I would like just to remind you all that you find all the slides from yesterday workshop, as well as the recording of the session of yesterday's session on Moodle. So at any point, together with additional reference material for those of you who are interested to dig more into these topics. So is there any comment, any question, any specific request as well before we start? Or if it should come up later on, of course, you're always welcome to share. Okay, if not, then I will share my screen. So I'm closing. Okay, here it is. And let's have a look. I don't want to spoil, okay, so into this 2-day workshop activities. Okay, day number 2. So today, as we were anticipating yesterday, we will look more in detail with some, let's say, concrete example, the backwards design approach. We will see how it can be applied into practice, in practice. Okay, I'm slow down. There is a new colleague who is joining us. So today we will restart focusing again on the backwards design. We will see some example. As you can see here, we will have also a more interactive and hands-on activity on backwards design, splitting in breakout rooms. And we will also ask you to start and see how does it mean to apply to, I mean, to engage in a kind of a real example yourselves directly, because this is also, let's say, important and a preparatory activity for your independent work starting next week. So we will have, for this reason, we have dedicated quite a significant amount of time to this first activity. So when we will reconvene from the breakout room, we will shortly, exchange our experience, and then we will have a short break. Actually, sorry, the exchange, I see it now, it will be after the short break because it's going to be quite intensive. So after the end of the interactive session, we will have a short break, and then we will reconvene. We will exchange your experience. I mean, you will exchange your experience during the backwards design interactive activity, as well as potential application that you can see or your interest in applying, if you foresee that could be applied also to your specific course, module, or activity. And then we will also exchange on yesterday experience with the Selfie for Teacher. What are the elements that have emerged that part in your self-reflection process that particularly have I mean that you would like to share and point out? Then again, we will have, oh sorry, the 1-hour break. Okay. And for the second part of today's workshop, we will concentrate, as I already mentioned, on a specific area of the DigiCompedu framework. So we will start reflecting and looking more in detail on the specific competencies that are, falling within the digital resources area. And in particular, we will also look and have a hands-on activity on the content curation competence and content creation. And then, as yesterday, we will have a very short final session where we will collect ideas and your soft feedback. Okay, so if there are no specific questions, remarks, comments, here we are again with the three steps that we have already seen yesterday. But as I said, today we would like to see together and provide some input on how this approach can be applied in a specific and concrete case. Here you can see, and this is will be our kind of example case study, as we would like to call it, an example of an online course, which is very similar to the one that you have, some of you have already shared and filled in our preparatory introductory work. So here it is, designed, or it is presented following this backward design. So even at the course level, so a very broad description of the course, as you can see, we can already identify the three key steps: defining the learning objectives, so the desired results, defining immediately the assessment, the final exam will consist in this case of an essay evaluated by the instructors of the course. Here, of course, the learning objectives were articulated with certain criteria, following certain criteria that we will look in more in detail today. So with action words like the students know, understand, acquire. So as you can see, the assessment related to these objectives. And then there is a very broad and overall description of the learning event, of the learning experience. So the kind of approach and the overall duration. So here we are at a very top level of our design. And this is usually called macro design. So the backward design approach could be used even to outline at macro design level, the course at macro design level. And we have seen what this means. It is also a way that can be used to describe the module, the overall structure of the course. So how many modules the course foreseen, but, and mostly, the backward design approach proved to be very much effective when designing at micro level. So when we are concentrated on the specific module and within each module on the specific activities that we foreseen as necessary to achieve the specific learning goals that we have set up for the course in general, but mostly module by module. So at micro level, the design at micro level includes or requires attention on the e-contents level, as well as on the activities. These two level, activities and contents, are those two, dimensions that characterize the micro design, the design of each activity, of each module, and where mostly for the e-activities, the backward design, so having this, structured approach of identified the desired result, even when we are designing specific activity and activities particularly. So an activity should be performed entirely online and digitally. So having this schema applied for each activities, as I mentioned, proved to be very effective. And of course, relating these e-activities with the specific e-contents that provided, I mean, the element of interaction for the students. Today, mostly in the second part of today, so after the 1 hour break, we will look into two specific e-contents, since we will address the digital resource area with some concrete example also on the kind of digital platform that could facilitate the creation and the sharing of these e-contents. Okay, so let's have a look to what does it mean applying backwards design approach for a module or an activity. As we already mentioned, STEEL means that we need for each module and for each activity to formulate the objectives using action verbs, as we mentioned already yesterday, to define clearly and unambiguously, and this is very much important, what the students should be able to do at the end of that activity and through performing the activity. We have already seen some examples, so to know, as you can see, the objectives might also be at a knowledge level, so not necessary application of some competence or demonstrating some competence. But still, I mean, it is very much important to define the specific level, if it is just a basic understanding and knowledge, or a more advanced, sophisticated kind of learning goals that we would like to that we would like students to achieve. And for this reason, when applying the backward design approach, it becomes very much crucial, since finding the learning objective is the first step, to also rely on a more solid characterization and taxonomy of learning goals. And this is why the Bloom's taxonomy here fit in quite well. So depending on the level and the kind of learning objectives, then of course we will also be able to define adequate activities. Here you can see another view, another way of visualize the Bloom taxonomy, and mostly this kind of view of the Bloom taxonomy really provide a helpful example of specific action verbs that we can use when we are going to define overall our course general learning objectives, and then entering more into the micro level, the specific learning objectives of each module, and then, of course, the specific objectives of each activity included in that module. This also implies that we should more and more come up with a more structured set of objectives. So to identify the objective that should be the overall objective that should be reached at course level, and then the objective that are at the more specific level of granularity when it comes to the module level, and the very, very specific and focused objectives that should be achieved at activity level. So creating this network and the relation and the level and the hierarchy of the structure of the objectives, again, it is another very effective strategy, mostly when we have to operate in an online setting. The second step, as you already, I'm sure, remember, is once we have defined and identified the specific objectives at all levels, is to define an effective way of assessing its achievement. So depending on which level we have set up the learning objective, if we remember, I mean, the Bloom taxonomy, if we are here, or either if we are here on the top of the pyramid, so that means that imply the application of skills, we need also to define specific assessment tasks that can help us to assess if that learning objective has been achieved. We have already mentioned yesterday, I will get very quickly on this, there are three types of formative assessment. that could be used in an online setting. It could be a self-assessment test, for instance, on module contents. Yesterday, we had a very, very, very brief and general example through the Mentimeter on how it could be done. We can have, or we can use also a peer review of short elaborates produced during the activities. We will see an example of this kind of process of formative in this way. I mean, in here it is indicated as formative, we will use at the end, but having participants and students reviewing peers short elaborates, providing and supporting them with a set of criteria that they should apply. It's also very much important, and it could be a very effective strategy for formative assessment. And then verification by comparison. This is another approach that could be used where the teacher of the course once each participant has concluded the activities, the teacher of the course make available an example of, let's say, of the final result that should have been achieved, and the students per se could compare and verify the difference between what he or she has produced and what was, let's say, the best practice or the example provided by the teacher. Here you can see another strategy that could be, I mean, that have been used in the sample course that we are analyzing this morning, where actually the structure of and the interaction among the contents, activities, and assessment is proposed. So in this kind of structure, for each module, the student should, first of all, interact with the contents, in terms of listening to video or face-to-face lesson or synchronous meetings, teaching lesson, online teaching lesson. So starting with the content fruition, and then do a self-assessment test to, let's say, that becomes a kind of mandatory activity to access the e-activity. So those students who fail to pass this self-assessment test, that means that they do not have yet acquired the necessary content, do not have access to the activities. And this kind of structures is repeated module by module. And at the end, only those students who have actually, as you can see, completed all the e-activities can then complete the full process and get access to the accreditation, which is conditioned by successful completion of the final exam and the final questionnaire. So this is another way to, let's say, prompt and force and build a kind of more structured path that force students to this kind of structure. Okay, very, very quickly, every time, I mean, we talk about the assessment, we need again to pay attention to these three dimensions, what we would like to assess. So we have already mentioned that if we are also going to look into the summative assessment, which is usually addressed at course level at the end of the course, and or the formative assessment. So first of all, choose between these two modality of mode of assessment, and then what we would like to assess. Again, we have already touched upon this, and the Bloom taxonomy provides also a good indication on this direction. And then, of course, how to assess. If we would like something which is more objective, so in that case, we would like also to use tools like tests, the quizzes, or exercise. Or if we would like something more subjective, so peer evaluation, problem-solving tasks, etc. Okay, and now we move to the very last step, which is once we have defined the learning objectives and the type of assessment, depending on the micro or macro level where we are, we need to plan learning experiences and instruction that can bring the students to achieve those learning objectives. And here is where we concentrate on the kind of pedagogical strategy that we would like to use. And again, this is also very much linked to the kind of learning objective and assessment. As we mentioned yesterday, this actually, when we are designing and defining step, is where we are designing a kind of gym environment for the students to exercise, to practice their knowledge or their skill, where they can really build and verify where they stand. So let's have a look into what could be a possible logical structure of an online module. So we're looking at the micro level that has been designed following the backward design approach. So as you can see, this module is mainly delivered, it is delivered, fully delivered online. So the content, the introduction to content is being done using video presentation. Then there is a second part, which is related to the activities. And then there is another part, which is related to the assessment. So basically, a possible logical structure for an online module encompasses these four steps. Let's call them like this. Four steps. The first one, where the student is prompted to watch and listen, so to interact with the contents. The other one, the other second step, which is very much close to the previous one, to understand more in depth the content, so in-depth study of these contents by looking into additional material to grasp really the content, the topic of that module. And then self-assess an individual study. If you remember the schema that we presented before, in this case, the self-assessment is put immediately after the acquisition of the contents, and then having access to activity. These two steps may also be shifted, so the overall structure remains the same, and the choice that the teacher can do is also to do first the activity to reinforce and apply those contents, and then move to the self-assessment. When we are talking mostly about the activity, there is also another element that you should consider, still considering the learning objective, that is the kind of pedagogical approach that we would like to adopt, and mostly this impact on the main type of interaction. Yesterday, from our very initial first activity, the interaction emerged as one of the key essential element for essential competence also for the digital educator or for the educator, the digital competence of the educator. So designing the kind of interaction between the students and the teachers, so students-to-student interaction, but also student-to-student interaction, student-to-teacher, student-to-student, and also student-to-materials interaction. So here again, we can see different type and different level of interaction. When we talk about student-to-student interaction, we are already looking and selecting a more collaborative approach. And again, this kind of approach should be linked to the kind of objective that we would like to achieve, should fit the type of learning objectives that we have set up. Or we might remain at a level of student-to-teacher interaction, where the learning objective that has been set up by the teacher is looking in just applying some knowledge, so for the students to be able to apply knowledge and understanding, not necessarily interacting with the other, or even to a more students to material interaction, where, the major focus is on learning content driven. So it remains at a very basic general level. And here, as you can see, depending on the strategy, we have already identified, once we select the strategy, we already select in a way the method that we would like to propose, the pedagogical approach that we are going to propose. I aim to prompt or foster collaborative learning because it fits the learning objectives that we would like to achieve, students to achieve. It means that we are going to integrate peer-to-peer or group activity. If we are aiming to more student-to-teacher interactions, active learning, it could be, integrated within a more still active learning, but not collaborative activity. And if we are aiming to a more learning content-driven approach, we are definitely looking into autonomous learning activities that center on using e-content, so short video where the students use and interact with. So here it is the same, you see, that we were looking before. Okay, and we are almost there. So how to, design such kind of ETVTs, applying the backward design approach, both at macro and micro level mostly. There are several scripts. Yesterday, we saw already a few examples of these scripts. Here, you can find another example that has been, again, taken from the sample that we have been looking into, the case that we've been looking into. And mostly, it is a script that has been quite used in several courses. And as you can see, there is also another very important distinction. To prepare a script, so a kind of framework which describes all the steps or all the elements of the activities, both from an educator perspective as well from the student's perspective. And when we are talking and we are looking into online courses, also providing students with a script, so with a template and the key essential element that they should touch upon is very much important. Is an additional guidelines for them to be sure that they are really meeting the learning goal or all the elements that are needed to achieve the learning goal. So if we look first in the ETVT script for educator, what does it imply? It means, first of all, to be numbering the activity. It might seem, not a very important element, but again, we have to think in a structured way. So it means that we are now addressing activity 3 of module 6. So there is a kind of hierarchy of flow, and we are in that specific point of the flow. So the duration of that activity, of course, the learning objective, the assessment method. So for activity 8 in module 7, are we going to focus on a formative or are we already looking into summative? You see, this kind of structure facilitates also the application of the basic criteria that we've been looking into. The type of activity we have already mentioned, if it is individual or in groups, how to carry out this activity, content, materials, resources that we need, the type of size and students' elaboration. Yesterday in our breakout room, there were already some of you mentioned that they have a huge course. I mean, their courses that are attended by a higher number of students, 100, 200. And this, of course, affects as well the kind of interaction, students to student interaction might affect the procedure, etc. So as you can see, nothing very special, but and definitely quite demanding, is a very time-consuming activity at the beginning, but you have also to consider that it's something that once we have done the first time, it becomes more a matter of fine-tuning for the next edition of the course or for the next activity. So the most challenging is to set up the first one, and then it becomes a little bit more easy. If we look into the activity script for the students, as I mentioned, it is more a kind of guidelines. And you can see some example of these activity scripts for the students in our on Mural. We have prepared some of these also for you. And again, for students who are working online, so without your direct the direct presence of the teacher, it becomes very much important to have this kind of indication. So for the students, it is important that the teacher explicitate the kind of context of this activity. So this activity is, is proposed in the context of this module. The objective that as a teacher, I expect you to meet is this. So to make them aware, we are also working here at the meta-reflection level, the kind of description. So you are expected to perform this and this and this step, the procedure. So before performing this activity, you should be aware, or you should have already completed, for instance, the vision of or the interactive. You should have interacted with all the content material, etc. For these activities, you need this, and then you will be assessed as a student in this activity using this method. And of course, when we're talking about collaborative learning activities, we need to be even more, to have a specific and dedicated kind of approach for that as well. So again, it is important that we choose the kind of collaboration strategy, the group size, etc. Okay, I stop one second. I lost the contact with you, so I will stop sharing and see if you are still there. Yes, that's really good. So, as I mentioned, we know that, again, it is quite intense and very dense kind of input that needs a little bit of time to be digested. But if you have any question already, or if you have any comments whatsoever, please come up. As I told you, we will now, do a very short activity, hands-on activity. You will do in group. So we will have, again, another opportunity to practice. So is there any comment, question? Oh, Antonio, please go ahead.
Yes. My question is, if I understood well, is it suggestible? It is suggestible that at the beginning of any course, of any subject, a questionnaire will be provided to the students. That is. I think aimed at understanding the prerequisites of the students according to the contents of the subject. Is it mandatory, suggestible, or what do you think?
It is absolutely a very good approach and very much recommended, in the sense that it helps the teacher also to fine-tune, the level of contents, the complexity of the activities. Of course, it will be a kind of fine-tuning, but it could also bring, at that point, when the teacher will have the opportunity to do this collection, let's say, of students, to know where the students stand, the course will already be designed. But still, if the teacher have this opportunity to do this, as you mentioned, to check the prerequisites, to check the existing knowledge that students have on that specific topic, it could help the teacher to really fine-tune his course and, for example, decide to add additional contents because he already detected that there is, a missing content or a missing topic area that is actually very much important and essential to do this course. So definitely this. And if I may, and then I hand over to Pan, there is also another element that could be combined with this initial questionnaire to call, you know, to understand where they stand, that is about their expectation. Because again, it's very much important to make the students aware of what are the learning objectives that they should achieve, and also to combine the learning objectives defined by the teacher with the expectation that the students have. And yesterday was mentioned by Francesco, the fact that students start how are we going to be assessed? What are the content of the course? So you see that they have already this kind also of expectation. And the more we are able to align their expectation and their understanding of the course, the more we can help them to reach the goal, the learning goal, and our expectation as teacher. Sorry, Pan, go ahead.
Thanks, Steph. I wanted just to say that this is a very good idea. And the only thing is that you can do it also with other means. You don't need always to use a questionnaire, for instance. In our case, we used Mural. We invited you the week, the introductory week, to put on Mural your ID, so to know better where are you from, your discipline, your background a bit. To put something also from one of your courses, exactly to know better your needs, your background, your expertise, and so on. And yesterday we discussed also in the breakout rooms about your expectations, your course design. So it's very important, and you can do it in many different ways. A questionnaire helps, especially if you have many students. Sometimes you have so many that you cannot do in another way. But there are also other ways to do so. But it's very crucial to know as much as possible about their experiences, backgrounds, and expectations.
Excuse me, Panos, do you use what? Neural?
Neural. Yesterday we worked in Neural, and now we're going to do the same in another Neural. It is a virtual workspace. There we invited you in the week before to put something about you and your course design, and it's the workspace that we will work today also in different topics. You will see in a second, Antonio.
Efra Rixo.
Paracalo.
Great.
So, Steph, maybe it's time to move to Neural.
Absolutely.
And also to the hands-on activity, because I think it's time to do something.
Yes, absolutely. I just wanted, I forgot, just to say that this template, that script template, as we would like to call it, you will have them available for the specific activity, independent work that you will do starting next week. Okay, here I was. Okay. So we are almost there. Let's see our agenda. Sorry, I have to go back. So we have, a bit late. So how much time do we take? Half an hour, Pan?
Yes, more or less. We'll stick to the plan. So around 10 past 10, we'll go back to the plenary. Now it is... Yes, we have half an hour.
Okay, that's great. Half an hour. Okay, so we're now
we're going to split in two groups, in two mm-hmm. breakout rooms. We have the blue and green group. I will split you in a second, but first I want to just share my screen and show you a bit the mural that we're going to work today. The mural will be also in the chat. Give me a second to put it also in the chat. So you have the link in the chat for this mural that I'm showing you. Okay. Now, you see that this is the mural on the left. We have the different resources. We have again this basic schema of backward design with the leading questions. We have all the additional resources, the template that Stefania mentioned, but here we have also the other templates from yesterday. We have some videos, we have other resources. And everything will be available for you until the end of the course. We know that some of you maybe want to go deeper and there is something more. It's totally up to you to explore these additional resources. Here is the space that we're going to work. You see that as we are two groups, it's very important to be on your own group's workspace. That's why I put this gray wall in between the two groups, okay? And here we have three steps to follow in this half an hour. On the top, I have again the instructions on how to use Mural. The basic thing is that you click, with a double click, you have a post-it, a visual post-it. And then you can just type whatever you want. And as we said yesterday, it's very important at the end to put also your name. As otherwise, we don't know who posted this, okay? When you click, you can change the color, you can change the size, you can drag and drop whenever you want. The instructions, if you want to do something more, are here on the top. Okay, let's go now to see what are your mission, your task. Here on the left, we have again the list of action verbs following Bloom's taxonomy. And you see, we start from the simpler level, that is to remember or understand things, and we go up to the higher level, that is to create things. And here we have more skills and competencies, while on the left, on the lower level, we have more knowledge and understanding. So you have also here some blocks with different kinds of assessment, okay? And you can drag and drop here. So what is your task? The first one is to start here. As a group, you're going to be groups of six colleagues. You have to define first one learning outcome, one desired result for a course. Not for a course as a whole, but just for a unit. Here we have an example. If we have a language course, an example can be to formulate properly a learning objective is to say, my learners at the end of this unit will be able to construct complete sentences using past tense in Spanish. You see, that's very concrete because I use one of the action verbs and it's clear what I want them to achieve at the end of this unit. And depending, as we said, on the type of the verb we are going to use, if it is, for instance, my students at the end of the unit are going to repeat or describe, this is knowledge, okay? If I put an action verb that is produce or set up or organize, it is more a skill kind of thing. That's why here you see that we have, and you can put your sentence with your learning objective to show if it is about knowledge acquisition or about the development of a skill. And then here you have a checklist. Is this outcome detailed, specific, measurable, blah, blah, blah. Okay, this is the first step because as we discussed yesterday and today, in backward design, we start with the learning objective, the desired outcome in mind. Then, as soon as you have this, you go to the next step that you choose one of these or any other assessment technique methodology that will help you to evaluate if your students finally have achieved this outcome. And then if you have time, we'll see, you can propose also some learning activities. But the most important is to properly design your learning objectives and decide what is the assessment method you can use for this. Here on the bottom, there is also even a generator that someone can use for creating this kind of learning objectives that are very specific, very concrete, and then allows you to assess and design your course in the proper way. So this is more or less your mission. If you have any question, please ask. Otherwise, I will split you in the breakout rooms. And there will be myself and Lisa in the blue group and Stefania and Maria in the green group. Any question? Okay, let's go then to the rooms.
Hi, Steph. Teletransported in plenary.
Because I got the power, Steph.
Yes, you got the power. Luckily for that. Because, I mean, I would always have more time. Always.
Always. This is our pattern, you know.
Okay, but, I mean, as I mentioned, it is a challenge. It is time-consuming activity, but
Yes, but we have already some good examples. Okay, the difficulty was to find a topic, but then we decided to use the language course, yes. Because all of us, we have done some language learning, you know, all of us, we speak a foreign language, so we have some experience. I want to invite someone from my group, and then from the Green group, just to share their experience.
Would you like to do it now or after the break?
We can do it after the break. I think we deserve a break. Mm-hmm. Okay. 10 minutes. I think we have in the in our planning.
Agenda.
It
yes.
is 10:18. Yes. So come back. At 10:30, what do you think? 12 minutes break. I think we deserve that after this event.
Yes.
And then we can share our experiences about this exercise, and then we go back to the groups to discuss. It is the less intense activity then. Okay, so back at 10:30. As yesterday, please just mute your microphones, close the camera. So I would like to invite you to share with us your experience, your first experience with backward design, when you try to apply in this short exercise, if you think that this can be also a good way to do your planning, or to be very critical and say no, it does work for me, or I have a better way to do this. So you can speak your mind and be critical, or just share your experience, whatever you want. But please open your microphone and share with us.
I can,
Francesco. Yes,
I can just start. So because of I recognize that this method has a really high potential, big potential to design the core. The problem that I'm looking for now is that maybe we should start to apply this method really in advance. So I will start my course at the end of April, and I'm starting to think how if I would be able to apply this method, but maybe it's too late to try to shape all the things in this approach. So then I think that this approach requires time to be applied, and also to plan, for example, these preliminary tests or investigation that we can do for students. Of course, when we have a lot of students. So I was thinking, for example, bachelor students could have some problem because they are at the beginning, the first year, of course, they are at the beginning of the path, and they just maybe are focused on doing things as fast as they can. I would see this approach a bit difficult. While, for example, for master students, that they are usually few, So the classroom could be 60, 40 people, and they also maybe have a more clear ideas. I see this method more feasible for this type of student. But I mean, I recognize that the potential of this approach is really awful. I mean.
Thank you, Francesco. Stefania, I have also a question for you before giving you to the floor. Do you want to continue this discussion in plenary? Because we are not so many people, I think. Because
I think
now the idea is
idea.
To discuss about the Bagor design and about the selfie for teachers.
I agree to stay in plenary, panel.
Yes, yes.
I think it's better.
Okay. Francesco, thank you so much. And as Stefania said earlier, we know that it is a time-consuming process to plan in advance, to create a template and everything. But the good news is that as soon as you do it once, then in the next course, in the next version, or in another similar course, you have already a good basis, and then you just fine-tuning so on. For me, the main question is exactly if this process to start having in mind what you want to achieve and formulate in a very clear way, that's why you have also this checklist in on Mural, is the crucial step. But Steph, please go ahead.
Sorry, no, I just wanted to say something that, I mean, we mentioned yesterday, maybe today, I forgot to mention clearly. The really, from the experience that we had, the suggestion to each of you is try to do it with just a nativity. It is absolutely impossible that you restart the designing the whole course, because it would take months, ages, really. And you do not have yet the experience to address the whole course. So from my experience, when I started using it, I just did one activity. Among the whole course that was already designed, I just pick up, you know, one objective, and I didn't even mention if it was module 1, 3, 6, I didn't care. I just focus on one specific learning objectives. And then I say, okay, I design one activity, very short, 2 hours, doesn't matter, but it's a way to also train ourselves to take this kind of approach. So my advice, my suggestion really is also to take advantage of our course here, because you will have the opportunity then to get feedback from the others about these very initial activities that you design approaching this. And also, you know, we'll get the course team feedback. So it's just a way to enter. I do totally agree with you, Francesco. It's almost impossible, even if you would start in September, but because it takes time to enter into this philosophy, into this approach. But I mean, having this opportunity, I would really recommend that you just design one activity, very easy, very simple, but brings you through each step and start, you know, becoming part of your approach. Sorry if I jump in with this, but I recognize it's impossible otherwise.
Any other experience?
Antonio raised his hand.
Yes, Antonio, sorry, go ahead.
Actually, I didn't raise my hand, but anyway, you want, if I understand it well, do you want that I tell my experience about projecting a subject? Yeah, this is the question.
Yes, only if you want. Sorry, Antonio, I thought you raised your hand. That's why I call you. I mean, if you would like to share, just your impression.
No, but there is no problem.
This approach, yeah.
The only problem is that I lost 2 minutes of my colleague Francesco, so I don't know which was the introduction. But anyway, do you want that I will share my experience about projecting a new subject?
Yes, mostly. What do you think about this approach that we have seen this morning? Do you think, I mean, it, the backward design approach that we have seen this morning is something that, I mean, it could be feasible for you? Do you see it as an interesting approach, or you are totally against it? I mean, just sharing our ideas on the proposed approach. And
yes, actually, I like this approach. Partly, I guess in my past, in the sense that I used, for example, the questionnaire as the first part of my subject for my students, in order to understand their basic knowledge that are needed for understanding the topics that are included in the course contents. So I'm very, of course, I want to improve during this this online course that we are performing, but as far as my experience in my at Palermo University, together with the two colleagues, we decided, for example, to propose a free bachelor degree, subjects on different topics, of course, according to our competences. And in that time, I decided to develop a new subject, including all of my research competence experience. So I included it was called Machines and Plants for Environmental Protection, including soil conservation, tillage machines and implements, precision agriculture techniques, and anaerobic digestion plants for producing bioenergy and biofertilizer from biomass. So it was just 24 hours of frontal lesson, but it was interesting because I think that a teacher must be a teacher researcher. So before a researcher and then a teacher, in order to update his topics according to the research results he's doing day after day. So this is what I think. And of course, I will get benefits from this course because if I apply this kind of backwards approach, I can aim more at my at the objectives. That is to provide the students, of course, with the learning outcomes that can satisfy what a teacher must aim at the beginning of the subject. So, for example, I was thinking at the so-called scheda di trasparenza in Italy. So that is the course contents, including Dublin descriptors, assessment meet, and so on. In Italy, you know what we mean. But the problem, I think there is a problem, because for example, for Italian researcher teachers like me, because as in Italy we know, before starting a subject, we must decide which are the topics of the subjects, which are the ways to assess the students, and so on inside that scheda di trasparenza. Okay. But the problem is the absence of flexibility. I mean, even I realize, for example, according to the feedback from the questionnaire, the starting questionnaire that I proposed to the students, I realized that maybe they need to know more, to know some topics that were not included in the course contents. Theoretically, I couldn't add these subjects, these topics, because they are not included in the scheda di trasparenza, in the course contents, and so on. But it's a shame, because if they need, if they didn't do, for example, some parts of physics, and they don't, and they will not be able to understand the mechanics, for example, okay? So mechanics applied to agricultural machines, for example. So the problem is this, because we face against the stupid bureaucracy rules in Italy. So I hope in the future there will be more flexibility, and the teacher can adjust the contents of the scheda di trasparenza in order to satisfy what really that classroom, that sample of students need. This is my consideration. Thank you for
Thank
listening.
You, Antonio. Okay. Tula needs to go. Okay, Tula, no worries. Any other ideas, suggestions, feedback about this approach? For us, very important.
One word, if I love to do it. My experience is very different with courses which are composed by very few amount of people. It's not the same teaching 30 people than 200. So in my experience, these pedagogical instruments, I love the logical structure of the online module that you have shown. The frontal teaching and then the student teacher, student. This is possible to do it when the group is very small. But with 200 people, it's very difficult, particularly to assess during the steps.
If I may, Elisa, it very much depends on the type of assessment and the type of activity, in the sense that, for instance, if you remember the structure that I show where they have to interact with the contents and then they have to do this test, of course, it should be an automated test. And that course was actually a massive open online course. So it was, it included almost 250 students. And in that case, for instance, it was not even face-to-face. It was delivered as through, video lectures. Because, as you mentioned, it was definitely almost impossible with such large number of people. And in that way, it's the type of assessment, the type of activity that you perform, that you propose, that very much are impacted by number. Of course, peer collaboration or peer feedback becomes challenging, mostly because students have different timing, access the contents in different timing. So proposing collaboration activity when there is such a large number of people which use different timing, etc., it's almost difficult, and you have to stay in a lower level of the pyramid.
That is right, exactly. I mean.
Exactly, but still the approach, the three steps, it very much remains the same. And mostly, it's the kind of approach that changes, the kind of activity and the kind of collaboration or interaction that very much is affected by the number. But the structure instead works even for larger number.
I see. Yes, probably we have to work on the particular activities, as you said, how to design these activities and how to evaluate them. Because I have a course with very few, number 30 students, and it's very easy. I follow them, I know at what point they are. But with the very big course, for me, it's much easier just to teach. I propose the examples, I propose the problems, and then they resolve. And I continue with the teaching. It's frontal teaching. But I have the difficulty to evaluate during the steps, step by step. I continue, and I evaluate just at the end. So probably there are instruments, but for me it's difficult to apply this philosophy.
As I said, one learning objective, just even understand the concept of, okay, very easy. And then the type of assessment is a matter of understanding, probably a quiz, something which is automated.
Yes.
Could be a good starting point.
Auto quit, no?
Yes, exactly.
Probably, yeah. I see.
But it is really a way to enter into the flow. Let's go.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, Francesco. I don't know, Pam. Sorry, there was others. I stop. I shut.
No, please, Francesco, who wanted to...
Yes, just to add that, for example, a solution when we have a really big planner, it could be using tools like, let's say you use yesterday, that was like Mentimeter. Mentimeter, but maybe just something simple, or during the lesson, just to also to take a break, because we usually have a 2 hour of frontal lesson, so then I can imagine that that student became boring just after 30 minutes or less. So then it could be also a tool to take a break to fix some point, and asking easier question, or what do you think is this, and after a list choice is also like a game, so then you attract more people, the attention of the people, and maybe you maintain also higher the level of attention during the lesson. I don't know. I would like to try this, but we will see if it will work. Because
actually, we did this in the previous edition of the course, that we introduced also a gamification aspect on Moodle, and almost in all the platforms there are modules that you can use in order to have this gamification part. For instance, in the previous edition, if you open and read the handbook, you got some points, okay? If you do a task or something, you got some points. And then it was a way, you know, for the students to somehow be more engaged. As you mentioned also, Francesco, the Mentimeter is a very good way to engage when you present a topic or something, to have a very short quiz with 2-3 questions. These kind of things, you know, that we have at the leaderboard or the winner and this, that, they work because, you know, learning is social, and people are more engaged when there is something that has fun. Or, and you mentioned yesterday when we did the icebreaking activity, you mentioned adaptability, you mentioned interactivity, you mentioned something that is fun and creative. And we have to introduce small, you know, parts of these kind of things also. Otherwise, as you said, Francesco, if you have just 1 hour just lecturing and so on, we know that we will lose their interest. But I think this is very important to keep in mind. And as Fania said, even if you have a very big group, still you can do some of the activities there and plan in this way. And of course, there you can use quizzes or online tests, because when you have many students, it's not possible to ask them to do something that you have to, you know, assess one by one. But there are always different options there. Any other experience?
It works if we have an internet connection.
Yes, of course. This was a problem, actually.
Yes. Any other thoughts, experiences, doubts, objections, criticism, whatever? We are open to anything. It's your time here. If not, Steph, you can go to the Selfie for Teachers. You can ask the colleagues about their reflection about the self-reflection exercise we did yesterday.
Yes.
And Steph, you mentioned that finally you have 9, not 10.
Yes, the minimum number of participants to get the group results as a group was to have 10 people participating in the course. So I will just share briefly my screen.
But this way, you can invite Okay. If someone of you didn't...
because unfortunately it is over now.
It's over now, okay.
Yes. So okay. Anyway, if you remember yesterday, okay, when we entered here, okay. So this is the test that we did for the previous course. This is the one yesterday, you see, 22nd of March, 28. So it's already over. And as you can see, when I click on report, it says, sorry, the minimum number of 10 didn't fill it in. So they basically do not.
We're so close. Me, so. Eh?
Yeah, yes. Okay. Anyway, I show you instead what happened in the previous one. So if you would have reached the 10, of course, the level would be different, but just to show you which kind of information would be available as aggregated, anonymized aggregated data. So on average, the fact that on average there are, it shows where on average participants of that group are positioned here as experts, and then also area by area. And as you can see, it provides an indication. So it is very much useful, as we mentioned yesterday, mostly for those who are, teaching a group of students. We were imagining it's a way also, as mentioned by Antonio this morning, to check where the students stand. If we think about a future student, a future teacher, okay? If you're teaching a classroom of future teachers, primary or secondary teacher or university teacher, it provides you as a coordinator of that group of students with an overview of where they stand in each area. So in this case, as a coordinator of this team, I would have seen that they might need much more support in understanding how they could facilitate learners' digital competence. So I could propose to my students activities that help them support their students. Another area where, they seemed, if we take this as a kind of case study, they seems to be, to need much more input is this one related to empowering learners. So as a coordinator of that course, I could propose them more example, activities, readings to better understand, for instance, how to propose active learning activity, student-centered activity, or inclusive activity, etc. All the elements that relate to the area of empowering learning. And as you can see, the system as well is trying to give some input in that direction. And then, even more interesting, if we take again this area of empowering learning, the system helped me to understand among the four competences that are included in this area, which one is the lowest one. And as you can see, actively engaging learners. So again, as a coordinator of this course, I could have really very much prompted the students or provide them and support them to address these aspects of actively engaging learners. So I'm really sorry because, we haven't been able to have for this course, but each of you has had the opportunity to have its his or her own individual report. So we would like to hear from you if there were elements, areas where you finally, your digital competence were lower or even higher than expected. And what other elements emerge in your individual report that, you are considering also to focus on, for instance, looking for courses or material to improve your competence in that area. We really recommend you to look into that as well, of course. So is there anyone who would wish to? Oh, please, Maria Rita.
So, for example, yesterday I realized that my competencies are particularly low in assessment and empowering learning learners, because I never reflect on this topics. So at the beginning, I feel quite confident, but at the end, I say, "Oh, okay, there are a lot of things that I never considered. So I need to improve, to learn more about this topic."
Thank you very much, Margherita, for sharing.
And exactly, this is the idea behind this self-reflection tools. Reflect. And see if there is something that you won't need or can improve. Okay, thank you. Elif.
Yeah, I had the same self-reflection that Margherita had yesterday, because I am teaching educational technologies. This is why it was so interesting, because even though I selected too many things, like I feel like an expert, or I select, I use, or I couldn't select the one that I was not a real expert in many different areas. That was what I think, because I couldn't like modifying or reoffering, or, you know, what, like copyright, something much more higher than the level that I have to have, I think, teaching the educational technologies. This is what I do. I'm not an engineer or something like that. You know, it is related to my teaching area, which is pedagogy and didactics. But it is still something that I have to improve, which was really interesting. It was something that I was so sincere to myself, and it helped me to reflect more on the things that I have to improve, I think. As a teacher trainer that uses technology every day, every time. So it was so useful, and I think I have to improve many skills still related to digital technologies. And thank you for presenting this this tool, because it is something so new to me. I have done different questionnaire self-reflections of DigComp or something related to digital technologies, or TPEG, something related to technologies. Yes. You know, I had opportunities to reflect on my digital competences, but this was something much more detailed on different areas. So I really think it is a useful instrument. Thank you for...
Thank you, Elif. Thank you very much for your input and feedback.
Any other feedback?
Yes, I would like to say also the same. I have the same feeling. It was very, very useful. Of course, I was in the 30. So exploring. I know yes. that I am exploring, but it's difficult to jump. Because you need the information. Of course, we are here for this reason, to learn more, to jump, to improve. So thank you. Thank you for the instrument and, of course, for this course. It's very important to have this knowledge, to admit, at least the knowledge that you do not know and you have to improve.
Yes,
so this is important.
If I may, I want just to mention two things. One is that we don't need to be all of us on the expert level in all the competencies, okay? It depends on the topic, on our background, and all these kind of things. The most important is, also, but it's very important to know where we are. This is important. And the other thing is that how these tools have been developed, because as I said yesterday, we have actually three tools. One, it is selfie for teachers, that is for educators at all levels. We have the selfie for a selfie, that is for educational organizations. We have the DigComp SAT, that is for lifelong learners. Okay, all these tools and the frameworks, competence frameworks that are behind these tools, have been developed by the European Commission. And following a very participatory process, analyzing existing tools, consulting experts, and so on, testing these tools in different countries and so on, adjusting and doing also psychometrics and other ways to see if they work. And we know that these tools are valid and reliable, and that's why also we propose them. And I think they are quite good to do what they say that they do. They are self-reflection tools, okay? And when you do this process, you see where you are, and then 1 year after, you can repeat the exercise to see again where you are, because technology is something that is evolving so fast, and it does mean that if this year I am at this level, I next year I will be exactly at the same level, okay? It's something that goes not like this and always go up, but you know, it has different ways that you can progress in all these different areas. Any other thought, feedback? Antonio?
Yes, please. I would like to see something less specific, because by starting from Francesco's talk, I agree about the need for improve the attractiveness of our lessons, because in the last years, sometimes after at the beginning of a new lesson, no, I ask some questions to students as far as what I taught in the previous lesson, just to realize if they they learned something, if they attended with the, not only physically but also mentally to the lessons, and I got a good feedback, because in this way it is possible to keep the attention of students much higher, and so this is important. But for example, I have a gap in my experience, in my teaching experience, because I never used the tests during the lessons. Of course, after a part of frontal lessons, or anyway of lessons of a teaching activity, I never used the tests. Only the first test for prerequisites, okay, at the beginning. But my idea is that this could be very could be interesting. Could be can improve the learning outcomes of students. My only doubt is tests with marks or tests without marks, because some of my colleagues I know that they do alpha marks, for example, at mid teaching activity, and then half mark at the end, and then they do the average, and then they give the final marks, you know. So of course it depends on the subjects, but this is a question that I would like to solve, of course, together with you, thanks to the experience that I will get from this course. Thank you.
We also believe in the soft feedback. And this is what we use in this course. As you said, it depends on the course, on the subject, on the people you have. In our case, for instance, here, that all of you are colleagues, university professors with your own experience and course design and so on. It doesn't make any sense to put the grades or whatever. That's why we use the soft feedback and these kind of things. For instance, it depends on the course, the duration, how many students you have, what is their background, and so on. My personal experience says that it's good to have in each learning activity something to get some soft feedback or do something more. But it's my personal experience. But as you said, Antonio, we'll try to develop this further. Stefania, sorry.
Yeah, no, just very quickly. I think that about your question, marks or not marks, I mean, grades or not grades, I think that assigning point. Again, it depends very much on the role that you give to that assignment. Before, Francesco was mentioning a kind of, yes, to that assessment, sorry. Before, Francesco was mentioning a kind of assessment that was more to engage the students. It was not it was not a formal assessment at all. It was a way, you know, to check if all the key points, to restate the key points, because when you do this kind of funny quiz, you point out what are the key concepts in a way to them, because you are asking them, particularly them, because you think those concepts, because you think that they are critical. And it's a way to engage. Different, and it could, I think, still be valuable if you, at a certain point of the learning process, okay, let's do a checkpoint. It is an official assessment, okay? And here it's really a checkpoint where we will be able, and it becomes in a way also formative for them and for you, because after 3 weeks, of course, I do a checkpoint. They are aware that there is a checkpoint there where they have also, to measure themselves with what has been taught in the 3 weeks. And that is another absolutely valuable way to avoid, spending 3 months in lectures and then find out that, for instance, some of the critical contents were not grasped. So it's different, really, really very much matters what is your objectives, even what are your objectives as a teacher, even when you define your assessment. Francesco, please go ahead.
Yes, about the checkpoint, and after I would like to ask also something about the self-feed for teachers. But the first question is about checkpoint. What do you think about checkpoint, anonymous or doing, for example, if it's a formal or whether doing this in an anonymous way or not?
Good question. And again, it depends very much on when you position the checkpoint, in my view, and then also if you would like them to be a kind of motivation. So if it should be a motivation, I think it cannot be anonymous. It's a way also to encourage them. Of course, the weight of that grades could be not too heavy. It should not be too heavy, because otherwise, you're endangering the whole process. But again, as I was saying, it could become even engaging if they are aware that there is, if they are aware that the purpose of that is in a way formative, because they have a chance to keep up with what was missed. And it gives a chance to you to fine tuning some elements for the next step. Because if you see that there are some topics that honestly, most of them are not able to manage, means that you need to put more emphasis on that, to do maybe to add an extra activity. So in this way, it also becomes interactive with them. In the sense that you really try to see where they are and to empower them to reach the level that you expect them. So, I would do anonymous when it is in a way, at the beginning, just to make them feel aware. But then if it remains anonymous in other steps, it becomes difficult for you also to be able to help them. But again, it very much depends also on the classroom, on the kind of feeling, if there are 200 people, if there are less than 200. And
use this gamification aspect that it is not great. It's not totally anonymous. But you have this motivation because you want to, win or whatever. Gamification can also be a third option there. Elisa, please.
See, I have to share with you my experience because I've done anonymous and non-anonymous.
Fantastic.
In the middle of the lectures. And I must say that the anonymous does not work because people that not study. It's like a joke for them. It's not such an effort. They do not study as much as if they know that it counts. So I think it's an exercise, like, you know, problems, but at the lecture. But I think that not anonymous is much better. I agree with Stefania, in my experience, at least.
It also remind me that the fact that if you put this kind of checkpoint is also a way for them to see the purpose of doing some activities. Because, I mean, there is in many courses, there is no obligation, no? You cannot oblige them to do these activities. So, but mostly when you would like them to apply some knowledge, to develop some skills, the activities that you design are actually essential, because otherwise they do not have the opportunity to exercise their, you know, their abilities. So assigning a mark or marking, I mean, the results of this test or the result, setting up these checkpoints could be really a way to engage them in these activities. So doing the activities for them is essential to then in a way to address in the best possible way the checkpoint assessment. So there is also this kind of combination. Most of them might think that just listening to the lecture or just listening to interact with the content is enough. But if you as a teacher think that instead of doing these activities is essential, having, you know, this kind of assessment checkpoint, it's a way also to make the activities in a way compulsory, no? Very difficult.
Okay, thank you.
But my approach is saying, please study because I'm going to count the vote, it's going to be important. And then it's a disaster because, of course, they are very young. It's the first year of university, it's very hard. So it's a disaster. And I say, okay, don't worry. It's so bad, so don't worry. I'm not going to count it. But at the very first, they think, oh, yeah, we are very worried, so they study. After the disaster, you say, okay, don't worry. I'm not going to take it into account. So this is going, this works, I must say, in my experience.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you all. I think we have to go to our well-deserved break. I think we can be all back at 12:10. Okay. Yes. 12:10. We'll keep the Zoom open. So just mute your microphones, close the cameras. We'll stop recording, and then we are back to continue with two more activities.